Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ball for Smith. Oh! Shootout, Naeem, or are we? Can you believe what you've seen?
And a great goal by Saville! Oh, that was a tremendous goal by Saville!
Welcome to the Arsenal Weekly Podcast with me, Dan Roebuck. On today's show, we'll be recalling some classic European nights with some of the players that lived them. David Hillier recalls the 1995 European Cup Winners' Cup run. Charlie George tells us his story behind the 1970 Fairs Cup victory. But let's kick off with a famous win in Copenhagen with Nigel Winterburn and Alan Smith. Nigel Winterburn and Alan Smith were part of our victorious European Cup Winners' Cup team against Parma in 1994, with Smudger famously scoring the winner. Here are their memories of the game.
It was a terrific run. I mean, the main thing, obviously, is the final against Parma. I mean, nobody gave us a chance. We got a lot of injuries as well. I can't actually remember the team that played that game. I couldn't name it man for man. I'd have to go back, and as I said to you before, I sometimes look back at the books and just to jog your memory. But, I mean, against that Parma team, nobody expected us to win that game. And we got absolutely battered for 90 minutes, but Alan Smith came up with a goal in the first half, and we just managed to hang on, really, and everything went our way. But you know, it was some achievement because, as I said to you, nobody expected us to win that competition, and you know, it's just a great atmosphere after the game. Listen, it's always very, very disappointing for the players that are injured or don't get selected, but I think, you know, as a team, you're focusing on the job ahead. You put your trust in the players that are coming into the team. So I don't think you worry about being, if you like, under strength as a team. And we looked at the opposition, we knew they were good, but you just have to try and restrict them as much as possible. I just think on that evening, everything fell into place for us, and maybe we were destined to win that trophy because, as I say to you, on paper, there was no way we were going to win it. And even people were talking about we had no chance. But, you know, to pull that off, I suppose it was one of the big shocks, you know, of that era, you know, in sort of cup competitions. The one thing I can remember is coming into the stadium. We came in from the side, from a side entrance, and there was, at the side of the pitch was a podium. And the one thing I can remember, and I think it's more to do with that than the cup, was that it had winners Parma on it. And obviously on the opposite side, it would have had winners Arsenal. But obviously we didn't see that side of it. And I think that's what, as I can remember, was one of the defining moments that thought, you know, okay, well, you know, listen, nobody's going to be as stupid just to print one team as a winner. Nobody does that, no matter how strong a favourite you are. But I think maybe that just gave us the spur to try and cause an upset. And on the night we did, as I said, and against a very, very good Parma team as well.
We were up against it in terms of injuries and suspensions. Wrighty obviously picked up that booking in the first leg, the second leg at Highbury against PSG. So he was out of it and he was our man, nicking the goals along the way. John Jensen had done his cruciates in the lead-up. We knew he wasn't going to be there. Martin Keown failed the fitness test, I think, the day before. So he wasn't available either because he would have been playing in midfield. So George Graham had to pick a weakened side, you might say. But the boys that came in, Stevie Moore, Ian Selly, did a fantastic job in the middle of the park next to Port Davis. And we were up against a really good side. You know, Gianfranco Zola, Asprilla, Thomas Broly, half of the Italian World Cup squad that summer. And I remember coming off the pitch the night before, we'd been training, and they came on and gave us a look of disdain down the nose. Who on earth is this lot? So that riled us a little bit. And when I got the goal, you fancied us, because that back four was at its peak. They just could defend with their eyes shut. And yes, we rode our luck a little bit. Dave Seaman pulled off some magnificent stops. He had an injection in his ribs. And one of those nights, yeah, we just managed to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I scored a few from outside the box, but yeah, not too many collector's items. So it started with that throw-in. Lee threw it to me. I knocked it back to him, and he's kind of helped it forward, and they made a bit of a mess of it defensively. A lad tried to overhead kick it, came to me, and it was a bit like Mickey Thomas at Anfield, a couple of lads converging on me, and I had to take it quickly. So I had to take the ball quite high, get my knee up, and make sure I kept it down, and I hit it, and I couldn't see if it was in because Luca Bucci, their keeper, dived after the ball had gone past him, so he missed it. And then I saw it nestling in the opposite corner inside of the right-hand post. And, yeah, great moment, yeah. And it came at a time when I hadn't been scoring too many. Those couple of years, I wasn't scoring too many for Arsenal, and it was a bit of a miserable time, if truth be told. So that was a lovely moment for me to get a goal so important as that. If we hadn't won that game, we'd have had to have gone to Newcastle to get something on the last day of the season to qualify for Europe. So all the plans were made. We were going to fly back afterwards, straight back, you know, and prepare for Newcastle. But as it turned out, we didn't need that result at Newcastle, but we still flew back. So we ended up back at Stansted about 3:30 in the morning. Obviously a few champagnes on the flight on the way back, which was nice, but it wasn't like many people would imagine it to be. It did go right. Yeah, we've had one or two chances, haven't we? Another one at the Parken Stadium a few years later. Obviously the Fairs Cup got the ball rolling, didn't it, in 1970. But yeah, Paris, Champions League final, unlucky. You need that little bit of luck. Hopefully it's not too far around the corner, the next one.
Let's hear from another Arsenal insider on the Arsenal Weekly Podcast.
Well, we're talking European nights on the podcast this week, and I'm pleased to say David Hillier is joining me to talk about one night in particular, but also generally a cup run that saw us get to the final, but unfortunately beat in the final. David, we've got to start, though, the season before, because Arsenal beat Parma in the Cup Winners' Cup final of 1994. You missed out on that. That must have been heartbreaking at the time. Just tell us the story behind it.
It was, yeah. I'd sort of got into the side, really, and I didn't really establish myself at all as a regular. But then with the European football coming, obviously there was more pressure on the squad. So, yeah, I got involved in the early games. And then we went to Torino, and I had probably one of my best games in an Arsenal shirt out there. And was delighted that the gaffer had picked me to play in the return leg at home. But unfortunately, I got an injury early on in the game. I had some stitches in my ankle. Tried to come back on the pitch and couldn't. And it put me out for the final, which was disappointing. But I was there to celebrate. It was a fantastic goal. Alan Smith, remember it well. Even though I'd had a couple of glasses of the fizzy stuff. And it was a great night for the club. You know, because George was really achieving stuff then. He was really doing well.
And we were hopeful that we could do the same in the 94-95 season. And again, you were looking to be involved. First of all, what do you remember about the run to the final?
Well, we played Nicosia in the early rounds. And I think I started three games in that run. But obviously the biggest game was with Sampdoria, double home and away legger, where we went for on penalties. Dave Seaman made some fantastic saves in Italy. And it was the first time I'd been to Italy. Travel with a squad, and it was just an amazing experience for me.
At Sampdoria, you started both home and away, so you started both the semi-finals. You weren't there for the penalty shot, though, because you've been subbed, is that right?
That's right. I think I marked Jugovic in one of the legs, because I've got his shirt, and it's a treasured shirt, because he was a fantastic player at the time. The fact that he came over and asked to swap shirts to a young lad, it was great for me, that. But again, great experience, and went on to get in the squad for the final.
And the final was against Real Zaragoza, a team that's not got that much European pedigree. So going into the final, I guess George and the squad were fairly confident that we could win back-to-back Cup Winners' Cups.
Yeah, I think on paper, the semi-final between us and Sampdoria should have been the final, really. But going into the game, we knew they'd be a difficult proposition, technically good, it'd be hard work inside. you know, the Spanish ways are, and a few dangers, but we didn't really have to do any extra homework, not like we did when we was playing up against players like Lombardo and saying, how do we stop Lombardo? And we had, you know, set plans in place. We didn't have that for Zaragoza, but I think we took it to them. We had a few changes. I think Martin Keown came in. Ray Parler played central midfield. So there was a few little tweaks to the squad.
When did you know that you weren't playing?
I knew on the 2 days before the game. 2 days before the game, because the gaffer always gave us that amount of time to prepare ourselves, especially those that are starting. And obviously, if you're not playing, you want to know what you should be doing as well. So you're concentrating on coming on early, and I did. I did get on at half time.
You did indeed. As it stood, it was 0-0. There were changes at half time. You came on, and also Steve Morrow came on. Nigel Winterburn and Martin Keown went off. So, tactically, how did it change? Where did you slot in?
I went straight into the centre mid. As I said, I think Martin had, from recollection, I'm not sure whether Martin had played himself, pushed into the central midfield, and he'd had an altercation, jumped on for a header with Ray Parler. And Ray had jumped underneath him. I think it cut. He had a really bad cut on his head and couldn't continue. That's why I came onto the pitch and just, you know, sat in the middle and did what I normally do.
What can you remember about the final then and that first half? Because it was tight. There weren't that many opportunities for either side. And in lots of ways, I guess it almost mirrored what we saw 12 months previously, because that was another tight game as well. Did Real Zaragoza surprise us a little bit with their quality and tenacity?
I don't think so. I think you've got to take into account that we was quite a tight team. We didn't score many goals. I mean, the 1-0 to the Arsenal was our tag, wasn't it? And so we knew the game was tight. We wanted to make it tight. We didn't want to go all out. We wanted to contain them and hope that you know, we'd get that one goal, that one or two goals that win the cup for us.
The opening goal from Snyder came 68 minutes, and then we equalised through John Hartson, 77. Great goal from John Hartson on the night. Pressured environment, only 13 minutes to go. How big was that, or potentially could have been?
Yeah, massive. I mean, John was a huge figure of a man, and when he was on form, he was, you know, and he had the bit between his teeth. And I think when he got that goal, we all thought, yeah, we've done it. And especially when you come on at half time and you've contributed, obviously, to the opposition going in front, so you're a bit disappointed that you've come on and now you're losing 1-0 from a personal point of view. But then to get back in it, the team to work that hard, we knew we had it in the tank. We had extra time in the tank, no problem. We'd take them on.
Already gone through extra time in the previous round as well. He did go into extra time. It was 1-1 at the 90 minutes. Were there any massive opportunities for Arsenal to score in that extra half an hour that
it was
you can
tight.
Remember?
I do remember Alan Smith. Maybe, I don't know, I think it might have been, no, Smudger was the other one, Paul Merson.
Yeah.
I think it was
Yeah, I think he did have one chance.
He had a volley. Yeah, I think it was I'm not sure where he hit the bar, just from recollection. But, no, I think from what I remember, Dan, the whole game was tight. It wasn't an exciting game. It wasn't the final that people dream about having. But as you said, we wanted to take it to the wire. We wanted to go all the way.
It didn't go to penalties because there was a goal in the 120th minute from Naeem, a former Spurs player, one of the few players that I recall knowing something about on the Real Zaragoza side. Talk us through that goal and your place on the pitch and how you saw it all unfold.
Well, he had obviously, being at Tottenham, he was wasn't our best friend from his previous clubs. But as players, you don't really take that into account. But there was a few things said after the goal, you know, so we don't like him again. But yeah, as far as the goal goes, I remember being, I'm centre midfield. It was on our left side of our midfield on the halfway line. Naeem just got the ball, opened up. I actually went out to close him down and I just got 2 or 3 yards away from him and he's literally just hooked the ball over his shoulder. He wasn't even looking at the goal. And if he was, he had eyes not only in the back of his head, there was probably in his ears as well. And it just flew and it just caught, seemed to catch the wind. And I see Dave going backwards and it was almost in slow motion. He was in as much shock because he wasn't really off his line that far. It kind of just carried on floating and floating and floating and carried and carried and carried. And it went in. I don't think anybody in the stadium could believe it then. And being virtually the last kick of the game, it was a bitter pill to swallow.
I guess in a situation like that, there is just simply nothing you can do because that ball is either going in row Z or somehow it's finding itself.
And,
the
worst thing is then it cost me a Gucci watch.
Why did it cost you a Gucci
watch? Because when we went into the dressing room after, each team give the opposition a present.
Okay.
And there was this little parcel present by everybody's kit. And it was sort of 8-9 inches long, inch and a half wide little box.
Yeah.
And I've just chucked it on the floor and stamped on it aggressively. And then I just watched Eddie McGoldrick open his up next to me. And it was a watch in it, and I was like... So I looked around to see whether there was a spare one and see if I could swap it over. But yeah, and it was like with the Rayo Zaragoza crest on it. So
I mean, in a situation like that, the final minute of 120 minutes of a European final, I mean, I can imagine the dressing room. Yeah, you're smashing things up. I mean, it must take a little bit of time to get over something.
Well,
you've gone
from the start of the game where it was so relaxed in the dressing room. I mean, I remember Eddie McGoldrick doing his usual showmanship in the dressing room. He used to like to run around in his little slip and be funny, and everybody was really relaxed. The music was on. We was happy. We thought we could do it. And then, yeah, the feeling at the end is just sickening, and you've got to fly home, and you don't want to see anybody. You don't want to eat anything. You don't want to drink anything. Normally, we'd be the first up there. But it was tough. It was a tough one.
Not the best, obviously, at the end, but the run was good. You had the starring role in the semi-final as well. I mean, when you look back on your European experience with Arsenal, I mean, there's a lot of proud performances in there for me.
Yeah, and I played against some fantastic international players. You know, the likes of David Ginola and people like that, just to be on a picture of them and watch them play when he was at PSG was just phenomenal, you know. And then you see them playing for their country. I wasn't a fully-fledged international, so, you know, I wasn't at that level, but I've been on a pitch at club level with them players. So, you know, I have played with them. Yeah, when you look back, you've done quite well.
And when you consider what Arsenal did in that era, getting to back-to-back European finals, I know the fledgling Champions League was operating then, but to have the success in that era in the mid early 90s, off the back of our ban in European football, yes, we were dominant if you dial it back to the sort of late 70s, 80s. But it's not like it is now. I mean, it was something special and unheard of. You were coming up against players that you didn't come up against, systems that you didn't come up against. I mean, Arsenal did phenomenally well under George Graham.
Yeah, and because there'd been that void of experience, I suppose. You know, those years when we wasn't involved in Europe, all players missed out on that. All English people missed out on that experience. So, yeah, we was back into it anew. But what he achieved then, I mean, since 89, two titles, double cup winning when we won the Coca-Cola and the FA. A win and a loss in Europe. It's just, yeah, it was a phenomenal 5-6 years for everybody involved at the club, and it set us all up for the rest of our lives with a life in football, which was great about it.
Well, David, thanks for popping onto the podcast to remember and reminisce about the European days of your career with the Gunners.
Thanks very much, Dan.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Charlie George is best remembered for his goal in the 1971 FA Cup final. But in his first season, he was part of the team that won our first European trophy. Here's his 1970 Fairs Cup story.
My story about that year is quite remarkable, really. to actually get into the first team, 19 years of age, and to play for your local side, which is quite amazing anyway. But to actually win a trophy in your first season is quite frightening, really. The Fairs Cup. It was quite a funny shaped trophy. It was long and it had like a couple of ears on the side of it. I think you finished, I can't remember where we finished the season before, but we'd been to a couple of finals. We got beat by Leeds and we got beat by Swindon. So to actually get to the final and win was quite amazing. It was a funny season, really, but I think I look back over the years and some of the teams that were in it were quite an impressive stature. Although the early rounds, we won quite convincingly, but some of it, there was some really good sides in it. I can't even remember how we actually qualified for it. I think we might have finished in the top six or something like that. But I don't know what is the Intercities Fairs Cup. What would that be called now? Cup Winners Cup? I haven't got a clue. We won the early rounds quite convincingly. We got to the semi-final and then we knew we had a game. It was against the great Ajax Johan Cruyff team. What a fantastic football team they had in the early, late 60s, early 70s. I think they must have been the favourites to win it. I think we beat them 4-1 on aggregate, if I remember rightly. I'm pretty sure it was 4-1, or it might have been, 4-1 on aggregate we beat them. I actually scored two goals, that's how bad they were. And one was a penalty, which wasn't a convincing penalty. And I can't really remember too much about the other one, but to actually beat the great Ajax side and Johan Cruyff, who was an amazing footballer, and he was actually the guy that set them alight. And then he went to Barcelona, and that is the way Barcelona play now, because he became their manager, and that is the way that he actually put everything into action there. The away game in Anderlecht, we were losing 3-0. Donal decided to pull me off, which was probably a good move. Ray Kennedy came on for me and scored a header, which the keeper basically should have stopped, but he didn't. So that put us in with a great chance in the return leg at Highbury. I think that, I can't actually remember what Frank said. I remember that Don had sort of, had a go at a few of the team in quite a strong way. We always felt that we could score goals. And as I say, I can't remember what Frank actually said, but I could imagine, knowing Frank, it would have been a few choice words. And everybody listened when he spoke. And that was a great thing about him being a captain of his stature. You know, you just listened to him and you knew he was right. And we put it right at in the return leg, which was the main thing. Great atmosphere. I don't think the stadium was full. The pitch was quite heavy. Eddie Kelly struck the first goal from the edge of the box. As the game moved on, that made it 3-2. John Radford scored with a great header, who was absolutely a fantastic centre-forward. My old neighbour, John Radford. Brilliant in the air, scored with a header. And the actual winner come from John Samuels, who was our top scorer in the Fairs Cup run that year. I hit a 30-yard pass to him right on his foot and he smashed it in the corner and we actually went on and won the game 4-3. Frank McClintock, our great captain, had played in so many finals, this was the only winning one he actually played in. And he wouldn't come off the pitch at the end of the game. He wouldn't let go of the cup. Absolutely amazing atmosphere. The pitch was heavy. I used to like heavy pitches, how we were used to in England at the time. And to actually, you know, come off at the end of the game, I said to my friend, if we win the game, I'll give you my shirt. And he's still got my bloody shirt now. So I wished I hadn't have done that, but I should have kept it. But that was my story on the actual final. I think, winning the Fairs Cup, definitely a springboard for the 70-71 season. We had a good squad of players. We never had any great players as such. We never had individuals. We were a team. I would say it definitely put us in great shape for the following season, that is for sure. And it proved it where we went on and won the double. Following season, we got beat in the cup. Following season, I think we finished third and got through to the semi-final. So it was definitely definitely part of the club moving forward.
Let's hear from another Arsenal insider on the Arsenal Weekly Podcast.
Well, we are looking back at some of the great Arsenal European nights, and none better really than the Gunners' 5-1 win in the San Siro against Inter Milan. And I'm pleased to say that Jeremy Aliadier joins me to reminisce about that night and indeed about that campaign. Jeremy, that was your European debut. Do you remember that?
It was, yeah, it was. What a game to be a European debut, by the way. What a fantastic night it was, and a great result, yeah.
It was a fantastic result, and a result that we needed, because although we were unbeaten in the Premier League, obviously for that entire season, It didn't go well in Europe, did it? The first three group matches, we drew one, lost two, including a 3-0 hammering at the hands of Inter at Highbury. Do you remember that game?
I do remember. Yeah, I was supposed to be on the bench, and then last minute we had obviously an extra player, so I ended up being in the stand and not being involved in the game, watching it from the stand. And yeah, what a battering it was. We were just outplayed all evening. I remember Martins scoring goals, Van der Meijden. They were much better than us.
Strange, isn't it? So good domestically, but at the time in those early group games, we were second best. We got beat off Kiev as well. We drew with Lokomotiv Moscow. Can you remember at the time, you know, was Arsene puzzled about all this? You know, what was the feeling?
We all felt a bit weird about it because, like you said, we were dominated the Premier League, you know, couldn't lose a game. We were just winning every game or drawing. And then in Europe, we just seems to didn't work out for us. We seems to maybe, I don't really know. I don't have any explanation to it. It was just maybe too confident, maybe. I'm not too sure. But obviously, we needed some good result in the second part of the Champions League after them three poor result, and we managed to turn it around.
We did indeed. Just the one point, as you mentioned, from the first three games, going to the San Siro, then we need to put on a decent performance because of that 3-0 reverse. No Patrick Vieira, first and foremost. How much of a blow was that at the time for us?
Well, that was massive. Obviously, Patrick was the main man. He was our captain. He was the centre of our team. And knowing we didn't have Patrick for that trip, we obviously knew it was going to be even harder.
And Ray Parlour was the captain as well. He doesn't come across as necessarily captain material, but at the time, one of the senior guys at the club.
Yeah, you know, Ray's always been, you know, one of the main character in the dressing room as well. He used to, you know, be a bit of a joker and stuff. And that's maybe why, you know, Arsene kind of felt that he had a good vibe about himself with the players. And yeah, it was the captain that evening. And, you know, when you haven't got Vieira, you've got to find someone else, I guess, to get the armband. So.
And you were on the bench and obviously, you know, potentially making your European debut and in somewhere like the San Siro, you must be thinking, crikey, I'm desperate to get on here. This is going to be fantastic.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, obviously I was desperate to, you know, to come on, make my European debut. And, you know, there's no better place to do so. You know, when I got there and saw the fan and the stadium, and, you know, I remember it being, you know, what a great atmosphere.
Arsenal took the lead. Thierry Henry, side-footed from just outside the area. It was going to plan, but then Inter equalised. Can you remember anything about the Inter equaliser?
Yeah, I remember it because, you know, we were, you know, playing well, shape, everything was fine. And then Vieri got that ball, tried a shot from quite far away outside the box, never thought it was any dangerous, and he got deflected by Saul Campbell and just kind of lobbed Jens Lehmann and touched the bar, went in. So it was, you know, everybody were just bit down about it because we were playing so well and really, you know, thinking we've got this, and that kind of, you know, got our confidence down a bit. But then, you know, history and
exactly. Second half started brilliantly. Freddie Ljungberg got one back 49 minutes. It was still in the balance though until the final 10 minutes because we scored three goals in the final 10 minutes. One of them was a Thierry Henry special. I mean, when you think about Henry, that sort of era, you know, sort of 02 to 04, I thought we saw the best of him. I mean, that goal was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was the best of Thierry Henry that year, I think. You know, he was doing it week in, week out in the Premier League, and you know, he scored a hat-trick that evening, and it was just fantastic. As soon as he got the ball, you could see he was going to do something on his own. He didn't need anyone. So, it was magnificent.
Edu got the fourth, 87th minute, and then you got on the pitch. Can you remember when the boss gave you a call to get on or anything? Or what did you get any instructions? Game was won at that stage, you know, to a certain extent.
Yeah, game was won, and I think that's why he's probably gave me my chance there. You know, it was end of the game. I was warming up. He called me, so I was so happy. I rushed to get put my shirt on, get ready. Came on and he just said to me, just stay up there, make some runs, and then you'll get a chance, you'll get an opportunity.
And you did get an opportunity as well, because there's one or two that suggest that you should have scored the fifth goal, but you're unselfish, Jeremy. You squared it for Robert Pires.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I remember, you know, Ray just putting a ball down the channel. I made the run, I was fresh, beat the defender and end up kind of 1v1. You know, the angle was not the best. So, you know, unselfish, like you said, I'd rather prefer to...
Nearly made a mess of it, though, didn't he, Bobby?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I actually thought he was going to take it first touch. And when I saw him just taking an extra touch, I thought, oh, no, he's just not going to score. And then got a bit lucky there and managed to get the advantage and put it in.
Exactly, a 5-1 win. Brilliant night in the San Siro for Arsenal. And Arsenal fans went on to get out of the group. But unfortunately, of course, we went out to Chelsea, didn't we? When you look back at that season, obviously the invincible season, and I know that we got to the Champions League final in 2006, but you played in that group of players, and it's almost like a miscarriage that we didn't win the Champions League, either that year or the year after, the year before. It still rankles, I think, doesn't it?
I know, yeah. It'll always be a disappointment because how good that team were, you know, at that time, you just kind of can't believe, really, that you never managed to win the Champions League with this team because we were just so good in the Premier League, which obviously is one of the biggest leagues in the world. So you just think, how come they were dominated the Premier League but couldn't do it in the Champions League? And but that's, you know, that's football, different competition, and that's, you know, it's never easy.
Never easy, but that night was pretty special. Jeremy, thanks for popping on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
He's done it this time! What an extraordinary way to win the title.
When an irresistible force meets an old immovable object, something's got to give.
Roebuck versus.
Yes, once again, it's Roebuck versus for the Arsenal Weekly podcast. And I'm pleased to say that this week, me, Dan Roebuck, is taking on the club historian Ian Cook. And obviously, this is a challenge that I'm up for, but one I don't think I'm going to win, given Ian's terrific knowledge of the club.
Actually,
over the last few years.
Right,
yeah. Don't worry, Ian. No pressure on this one at all, even though I'm teed up. Liam is with us, as per usual, is our quiz master. Liam, let us know the quiz that I'm going to lose this week.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, Ian, don't worry, Dan is absolutely useless to this. So we've done one of these ones before. I'm going to give you a game. We're doing European nights this week on the podcast. I'm going to give you a famous European game for Arsenal.
Yeah.
And you're going to go back and forth, sudden death rules.
Yeah.
Tell me players in the squad.
Okay.
Arsenal players in the squad for that game.
Just Arsenal players.
Yep, okay. So the game is the UEFA Cup final against Galatasaray.
Okay.
17th of May 2000.
Okay.
And there are 18 players
18
listed.
Players, so 11 starters and 7 subs, obviously.
Doesn't matter if they came on.
Okay, just in the squads. Okay, Ian, we're going to go. You can go first. You can have first go on this one.
Okay. Henry.
Correct.
Thierry Henry is in. Well, I'm pretty sure I know who missed the penalties. It's awful to say that, isn't it, straight away? But so I'm going to have to go for Patrick Vieira.
Correct.
Because I know that he missed the pen.
I think Davor Suka
was on the bench, correct?
I thought Davor Suka missed the other pen.
Yes, he might.
I think he might have missed the other pen, yes, so that's a good one. Because he didn't miss that many.
No, he had a nice guy.
Yeah, he was always a good guy. Played for the Legends for
only,
us. This,
only
this
with
year.
Us for about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, he wasn't there. On the bench, I know he was on the bench because I spoke to him about this, was Nigel Winterburn.
Correct.
Because it was his last season. He was very annoyed that he was only on the bench and didn't get on, and he sort of broke for the board after that, which is a real shame. I think he half regrets it. Anyway, Winterburn. So we got him well today.
Dixon, I'm sure, would have been involved there somewhere.
Correct.
Unless he was injured. I was actually ill that night, I'm afraid. I had food poisoning, so I didn't actually go to that game.
Okay.
Copenhagen, I think, wasn't it?
Because it covered the
Oscar, yeah, same as the Copenhagen Cup final.
Yeah, I made it to that one. Sorry.
Okay, so Dixon for Ian. I'm surely David Seaman's in goal.
Correct.
Yes. This is the longest quiz so far. I'm pleased I'm still in the game.
I'm trying to think who the reserve keeper. I'll probably leave that for a minute.
Yeah. Remember, it's sudden death if you get one wrong.
Oh, right, okay. So
mind you, if you get one wrong, then I've got to get the next one right.
He's penalty shootout.
Penalty shootout style.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Okay.
Yeah. Ray Parlour must have been involved there.
He was, he started, yeah.
It starts to get difficult now for me. Surely Dennis Bergkamp must have played.
Correct, yep.
Started, excellent. 3-3.
Freddie got to be there somewhere.
No.
Freddie, so
win.
This is for the win. No, Freddie.
Goodness.
I'm going to go with Kanu.
Was on the bench.
Yes. What a win as well. That is like a double win.
But who did you think was the goalkeeper?
Not Rami Shabam, was it?
No.
trying to think back.
Manninger?
No. So you would have gone by there.
Was it the lad who played for Ipswich?
No.
Richard Wright.
No.
Was it Stuart Taylor?
No. I'll give you a clue. Go on. Hardest handshake in football.
John Lukic.
Yeah. Oh, Johnny. Yes, of course, he came back again.
Some of these days, yeah. Could have had Martin Keown. Martin Keown, we didn't get. Silvino played instead of Nigel Winterburn, Mark Overmars, Olev Luzny.
Was on the bench.
James Grimande, Stefan Maltz.
Wouldn't have got Stefan Maltz.
And John Lukic, so you've done really well.
We did too bad. We got seven yeah. out of the 18. Well,
cool.
That's a win for me, Ian. Thank you very much.
Well done.
It wasn't an easy game.
You're at Arsenal Football Club, it's going to be big pressure.
Take the positives and, you know, look at the next game.
I think we showed great determination.
At the end of the day, we're able to get a result.
Get behind each other and stick together.
In the end, it's something that's going to give you points.
The final word.
The final word this week is a painful one. Thierry Henry reliving the 2006 Champions League final.
The only thing that I think about that final is I would have liked the ref to let Julie score and stay 11 against 11. Because I think 11 against 11, they would have been in trouble. They were already in trouble 10 against 11. But I think it was... I always remember that opportunity that I had when Alex Leb gave me the ball. I had nothing in my legs because I was playing alone up front and trying to defend, trying to run at them alone. And the ball that he gave me, I just collapsed. You see, I shoot and the ball went, no power. And I just switched. We were 11 against 11 because I had a lot in my tank that day to run at people. But the thing is, I was doing it sometime from 60 yards away from the goal and not 30, which is not the same thing. But as I said, you know, it was like kind of a weird day because we had a great run and when we went to the final. But when you go to the final, you want to win it. I think it would have been amazing and extra special because the club never won it and still hasn't won it. So that was kind of a weird feeling after the game. The last 15 minutes were very difficult because, as you know, playing against Barcelona, you chase the ball a lot. And at the end, it was kind of difficult. Having said that, the two goals, I was pretty upset because when I went back in the dressing room, I saw that Samuel Eto'o was a bit offside on the first one. And the second one was a lucky goal. That ball was never going in. I don't know even know why they gave it to Ubeleti, because that ball wasn't going in. If the ball doesn't touch the foot of Manu, that ball doesn't go in. But to win games, sometimes you need to have the luck on your side. And maybe we didn't have it that day. We had it in the semi-final too, because against Villarreal, I don't even know how we didn't lose that game. But that's the way it is sometimes. And we were all saying after the game, what a pity that we didn't play 11 against 11, because that changed a lot in the game. After 5 minutes, I don't even know, 5-7, that was already changed the course of the game. Even though you still don't have to concede two goals and you still can win the game, but it was all a bit too much at the end running after the ball.
Well, that's full time on today's pod. Thanks to all of our contributors. You can help us out by subscribing to the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you never miss an episode. And while you're there, why not leave us a review and 5-star rating? On the next episode, we'll be hearing from some of our Scandinavian stars of the past.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.